sight should be talking to you, and how it does handoff. I mean, ordinarily, you drive down a highway, and as you pass by the near vicinity of each one of those cell sites, it does a handoff. It transfers you from one to the next. And when you're directly above that and looking at them at 100 of these cell sites simultaneously as opposed to one or two locals, I'm not sure the system can handle that. So all electronics except for cell phones, I don't see a problem. But I'm a little worried about cell phones if the aircraft is not particularly equipped with a microcell site. That's my guesses on this one, Christian. I'm going to pass it back to Christian, but if anybody else with more direct information, please give us your call letters right now. Victor Echo 3, X-ray Sierra Hotel with a delay, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Quick comment, Dick.
Comment.
Okay, I've heard John and Paul in that order. Go ahead, John, first.
Dick, I think this is only going to be applicable to if the aircraft is above 10,000 feet still. I think that's what they're going to sign it for that type of system. So it's not like you can get on a plane and just do whatever you want.
Comment? Yeah, that person saying comment, you're going to be after Paul. But the above 10,000 feet means that, in theory, you're no longer near landing and taking off near the airport. And there's where it's the most vulnerable time as far as all the electronics on board should behave as best it can as far as properly landing that airplane. But still, even at 10,000 feet, if there isn't a microcell site on board to use a cell phone from 10,000 feet, I think could very easily confuse the cell phone system. We'll soon find out. Paul first, and then the person making comment. Paul, WS2N, tell me what's going on here. K2LIW.
Okay, I like the idea of the micro cell site. I've never heard of that, but the advantage of that, I mean, the idea of somebody transmitting with a cell phone, you know, it could be on high power. I mean, the idea of getting into the electronics of a plane is part, you know, one of the main problems. But if the cell phone sees what it thinks is a cell phone tower, which is, you know, 50 feet away because you're in the airplane, it's going to go to low power. The further the cell site is away, your cell phone automatically changes power. People won't realize that. You're going out on a, you know, one-tenth of the power that you would normally go out of if you didn't have the micro cell system on it. Back to you.
Yeah, that's a very good point, Paul. The cell phone is a thoroughly adaptive system, and it sets its power according to what it thinks is the range between it and the cell site. And so, range-wise, when you're at 30,000 feet, it's going to be a maximum power, and therefore maximum capability of interfering with the other electronics on board. The person who said comment, please give us your full set of call letters, then your name, and then go ahead and make your comment. K2RIW, I'm the TechNet. My name is Dick.
Hi, Dick. The name here is Hank. The call is N1YDY. And the comment relates to a little bit of the history on why you weren't allowed to use your cell phone in the airplane to begin with. Back in the day, when we were all dealing with analog cell sites, the initial problem with cell phones and airplanes came not from technical reasons, but from political and economic reasons. And what was happening back when we were using the analog systems, and I think they called it AMPS 1. Anyway, what was happening is as you got into an airplane and you went to do a handoff, as you made the observation, you would be electrically visible to a number of cell sites, and the handoffs were becoming a little bit aggressive. And back in the day, they were extremely upset because a number of companies would try to bill you for acquiring your signal. And when there were multiple companies or multiple cell sites seeing your signal and then trying to bill your service for having picked it up, they started complaining that they were, quote, losing revenue, unquote. I used to work for Grumman, as I think I've mentioned to you in the past, and we ran into this a few times when the executives were trying to use their cell phones from the aircraft, private aircraft, before before it became a national law that you couldn't use. And so this became law, not from technical reasons, but from, you know, basically the greed of the cell phone companies and their perception of how they were, quote, losing money, unquote. And now we move forward a few, couple of decades, and we lived with this through the digital revolution, and there was a lot of discussion of...
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
The whole watt, like most modern things do, but they were up to 3 watts at some point, so they were significantly more powerful than the modern smartphone or handphone. But anyway, now we're going to do the digital system. Let me drop it. And with the digital system, what ended up happening was we lived with this older law. Finally, they've just gotten around to saying, look, there's a number of technical standards. One was third order, 60 decibel third order harmonic suppression. But once you proved that the cell phones really didn't have the ability to interfere with the aircraft electronics, it really just became a thing of expedience to get rid of that law. And one YDY.
Thank you, Hank. Good information. Hank, you're listed as Miami, Florida. You're either traveling in the New York area, visiting the New York area, you've got a house locally, or you're talking to us on Echolink or IRLT. Kind of curious how you're talking to us tonight, Hank. N1YDY, K2RIW.
Well, Vic, you and I discussed this once before. I'm visiting my parents in Port Washington. I've been here for a couple of months while I'm dealing with my father, who's getting a little elderly and needing a little more assistance in his daily routine.
Thank you, Hank. I guess I've got my antenna aimed in the wrong direction because I wasn't hearing you on the input. That was part of the confusion. Okay. That sure would be unhappy as a cell phone user if a whole lot of individual cell sites back in the AMPS days, picked me up and all tried to charge me simultaneously. Guarantee I'd be unhappy about that. So, once again, let me run this by one more time, Hank. You're fairly sure that a modern cell phone could be used from an aircraft. If the aircraft has a micro cell site, I definitely see how that can be done. But if I'm sitting by the window of an aircraft and I use an ordinary cell phone and the aircraft is not so equipped with a micro cell site, for a bunch of reasons, I think that's not good. Maybe I'm wrong. N1YDY, K2RIW.
Well, all I can say is from a historical point of view, we know that the folks that were on the aircraft that crashed in Pennsylvania during the 9/11 attack were able to use their cell phones in flight in order to find out what happened to the previous aircraft that crashed and to wish their family members goodbye. So we know that it's technically possible for this to happen. The question became for a number of years whether or not there were spurious emissions from various power supplies that would enter various aircraft systems. Back when I was involved with DC-9 and MP-8, we really didn't care because it was just a bunch of cables and, you know, maybe you would interfere with the radio transmission for a second, but there was really no way to interfere with the critical systems. Now, as aircraft progress, the company I'm with now is involved with Airbus, and there are, the Airbus 320 is published as having 137 different computers. Now, of course, there are various different stages and complexity. There's 7 primary computers, but, there's to use the word computer to describe the way a temperature control system works, things of that nature. But the question became, can these spurious emissions interfere with the operation of the sensors for these various computers? And at some point, the FAA really just turned the ball into the airline court. But what they said was it's no longer going to be prohibited to operate portable electronic devices, they call them PEDs, from the aircraft on a national level. They're going to make it up to the individual airline to approve or not approve that. And, of course, we know JetBlue went right away with it. Let me drop it. We know JetBlue went right away and one, I believe, the first or one of the first airlines to say, yep, you can use your stuff, your portable electronic devices on the plane at any time. But we also know that there are some other airlines that are taking a wait-and-see aspect. But whether or not it actually would get into your systems or your aircraft systems, they certainly doubt it. And I will tell you that you have a much greater chance of operating a cell site or reaching a cell site from a passenger window than you do from a cockpit, simply because most modern aircraft have heated cockpit windshields, and the method or the type of gold deposition, film deposition used in the sandwich construction of the window actually provides a very good RF shield. And one YDY.
Thank you, Hank. Don, good information. So I think you're basically saying the aircraft probably is not susceptible to interference from any of the electronics the passenger is likely to use. It's sort of what I'm hearing. But now, and yes, during the 9/11 incident, that aircraft in Pennsylvania, those people were communicating. And thank goodness, as such, a lot of information had passed that was needed for us to know what took place, when, and so on. Particularly the guy who said, let's roll. And we all know about that situation. I think a movie was made about it. So the cell system will function, even though whether or not it can properly handle a reasonable handoff, if a large number of cell sites are seeing this airborne cell phone transmitting simultaneously, can the system make rational decision for handoff? Obviously, in the 9/11 incident, it did. Was that partially due to the fact that Pennsylvania was a somewhat rural area, therefore the total number of cell sites in communication range was somewhat limited? That's a guess on my part. I don't know. If when the aircraft is flying over New York City at a high altitude, because you're in the process of going from, Texas to Maine, and you're at a high altitude over New York City, where there's a large number of cell sites, would the system behave correctly for the use of that cell phone, even if the airliner gave you permission? I throw that out as a question, and so some of you smarter guys will someday give us...
Repeater, timeout.
Final comment, Dick?
Some of you guys will eventually give us an answer on that. Go right ahead, Hank.
You know that cell phone companies provide what's called additional capacity at airports. So if you notice whenever you fly as a passenger that as you get ready to land, a lot of the people's smartphones start indicating that they've got messages while you're on short final, while you're still in the air, you know, a couple hundred feet up. And you'll discover or you'll note that a lot of the cell phone companies deliberately enhance the capacity that they have around the approach end of airports so that when people are in the process of landing, they can check all their messages as the aircraft touches down. And with that, let me jump out and thank you all for your patience. And one, YDY.
One last question on that one, Hank. Are you sure that those messages that people get are only as they're landing at that airport, that when they're at the approach and they're at 10,000 feet, they're not getting any of those text messages at that time, Hank, go ahead.
No, Dick, I'm not sure of that. All I know is that the cell phone company provided additional capacity, is what they call it, when in the final approach corridor for individual runways at some airports, Miami, Fort Lauderdale, LaGuardia, and Kennedy have them. I did know that, and obviously in LaGuardia you couldn't have had it out over the water, so I don't really know how they did it when you approached from the north, but I don't believe until recently there was any effort to encourage or to augment capability for aircraft that were, you know, up to 10,000 feet. I think that most people were assuming that you were sort of cheating, turning your phone on when you were getting kind of low and near the ground, and that's what they were. That they provided that capability or that service for.
Now, I haven't flown in some time. Are most passengers these days told to turn off their cell phone by the attendant as they get on that airplane? And you're giving the safety instructions?
Yeah, that was policy until just a, you know, a week or two ago when the FAA changed it nationally. But it used to be an issue where if a passenger operated his cell phone once the cabin door was closed, that the pilot in command of the aircraft was ultimately responsible for it. He was actually subject to, if the FAA determined that he was lax and didn't, for example, make sure that the flight attendants made the announcement that suggested that you couldn't use your cell phone or your portable electronic devices unless they were the ones that they told you you could use at the appropriate time above 10,000 feet, as we heard before. But, you know, if the FAA determined that you as a pilot in command were not making that, or not causing your flight attendants to make that announcement, then the pilot in command was personally subject to up to a $12,500 fine. I haven't heard of anyone who was assessed that fine, but it was written in that way, in one of the many ways that the government likes to use the carrot and the stick approach to get people to do what they want, the very big stick. But, like I said, I never heard of anyone actually getting assessed that fine. But I think now that they've done the change, we won't be hearing anything about that anymore with the flight attendants in one whitey way.
Thank you, Hank. More to follow. I'd like to believe in the near future we amateurs will have almost no flak using our portable equipment from our automobiles. I think it's going to take a while for the smoke to settle, though, because there's still a lot of confusion, and the fact that I see evidence that not many officers have really been informed about this, obvious by the fact that some officers don't know what ham radio is. From their point of view, it's a handheld piece of radio electronics, and therefore subject to a citation. Quite a few have that attitude. And with any further comments on all of the above, give me your call letters right now. K2RIW in the second half.
Yep.
For the Echo Link. Okay, I'm pretty sure that I heard Paul and another person. I'm Paul first. Go ahead.
Okay, Dick. I just wanted to finish up with that one quick topic from the space report that I didn't get in there. And I just wanted to mention that the Cradle of Aviation, Limock, is involved with them. And a week or so ago, they had, according to Rich, K2K and beyond, our president made an announcement on the InfoNet on last Monday that they had 45 kids involved with contacting the International Space Station. I don't have much more details of that, but I just want to mention that, you know, Limock is involved with the Cradle of Aviation, and they apparently did this. They wanted to do it last year, but I think Hurricane Sandy got in the way. So that was my last report. I just want to get that in there. Back to you, Dick.
Glad to hear that, Paul. When it comes to the methane being detected by many of the spacecraft in orbit around Mars, and yet Curiosity and Spirit and Opportunity on the surface could not find evidence of methane, has anyone speculated that the possibility exists that methane is present in the upper atmosphere, but not on the surface? Is that a possibility, Paul? WS2N, K2LAW.
I think that was Lou before. Okay, I agree, Dick. And that's what MAVEN is going to be detecting, the upper atmosphere, not the lower atmosphere, the upper atmosphere. It's going to come in, like 50, 60 miles above the surface, and then a highly elliptical orbit. And each time it does that for the next 2 years, once it's in orbit, it'll be taking those measurements. And as far as Spirit and Opportunity, they don't have the same detectors. You know, they had a lot of stuff, but I don't think they had a methane detector like Curiosity does. I think it's really equipped.
Okay, we got to keep an eye out for this one. Lou, NY2H, go right ahead, Lou, K2LIW. John, you fairly sure you heard Lou?
Echolink, whoever it was.
A1FJM. I think it's FJM. Go right ahead.
That's Kilo 1, Mike 2, Lee at Mike. Two quick comments. One is on the cell phone use in flight. I've been traveling a lot over the last few years. Many people text me in flight. They don't talk on their cell phone, but they hide them and they text in flight and they do it constantly. So it's happening. It's been happening for years. The other thing is, unfortunately, Connecticut law, this is the article that was in the latest QST magazine. Let me let it drop. Unfortunately, Connecticut law, last October, not this year, but last year, they very clearly wrote into the law that licensed amateur operators can operate their radios from inside their car, same as emergency responders, police, firemen, stuff like that. It was very clear. Unfortunately, the article this month, QST magazine, says that we got sold out, basically, and we cannot operate at all any kind of ham radio inside a car. It's, let me drop for a second. Some federal funding became available for safe driving, and our state lawmakers sold us out and signed it into law without running it by the ARRL or anybody else. So that's the latest in Connecticut, and that's this month's QST magazine. I'm done with my comments. K1MJM.
Sorry, I'm going to comment on the cell phone conversation with the aircraft.
Okay, Joe recognized. And Mike, gee, that's terrible. It was both in and then rejected at Connecticut. How long was that legality for ham radio operators in Connecticut, Mike? Do we only have that for a month or two and then it got rejected because of safety reasons? You live there in Trumbull. Any chance that this will be turned around again? And it looks like, Mike, you're one of those very lucky guys that your call letters just happened to be the initials of your first, middle, and last name. K1MJM, K2LIW, and the TechNet.
Yeah, the law was in effect for 1 year. I don't know when the law is going to change. It was just this past October, last month, that the lawmakers decided to go along and go for the federal funding for safe driving. But it was October 2012, they very clearly wrote into the state law that we could talk on our ham radios in the car.
That sure is sad, and I hope that gets turned around again. Joe, to B2LYY, I'm amazed you're up this late. Go ahead, Joe, K2LIW.
Yeah, I tried breaking on an echolink, and it's totally impossible. It's just not a transmission between, time between transmissions, doesn't work. Anyway, my comment on cell phones and airplanes is I can't speak for other networks, but I have worked for a place in the past that worked out to use the GSM network, and what I found very quickly that happens is once you set up a call on a nearest cell phone that happens to hear you, you will get very, very quickly out of range of that cell site, and the way the system works, it has to have neighbors to hand you off to, so you could very, very quickly get out of range, not have neighbors on your phones, you can drop the call extremely quickly. Because once you get up about 500 to 1,000 feet, your cell site sees a tremendous amount of RF up there, as far as level and so forth. And many of the cell sites that you see are not neighbors to each other. They're meant to be on the ground close together, but not when you're at 1,500 feet up in the air. Back to you, Dick.
I think I hear what you're saying, Joe. So I think you're saying that in the case of a text message, which is kind of brief, that's likely to get through. But if I wanted to hold a 10-minute conversation from a speeding aircraft, I think you're telling me there's a high probability I'm going to be dropped somewhere in the 10 minutes. Is that approximately it, Joe? B2LYY, K2LIW.
With the aircraft doing takeoff speed and keeping under 250 miles an hour, under 10,000 feet or 250 knots or whatever it is, I would probably say probably within 30 to 40 seconds you'll probably drop the call, not 10 minutes.
I wasn't trying to say that I'm not going to be dropped for 10 minutes. I'm saying that if I wanted to make a 10-minute call, the chances of me making it without being dropped, I think, are very slim. So you're suggesting we might get dropped every minute or so. Is that true, Joe? K2LIW?
Yes, because I tried a GSM phone in a plane at different altitudes taking off and landing, and I found that it's extremely difficult. Once you get very, very high up, if your phone only sees just a few very, very strong cell sites, it can make a call. But if it can't handle it between the cell sites that it sees, it'll just simply drag one call as far as it can go until it just simply drops it. That's the problem I've typically seen from high-altitude transmission with cell phones, because the signal levels up there, even inside the aircraft, are typically minus 60, minus 55, minus 60, minus 65 dBm signal levels, as the phone I use had the had measurement capabilities on it. So the signal is very strong up there, and you can actually drag the call for many, many minutes. So I would say, to clarify that, yeah, you might be able to hold on one cell site for a short length of time, maybe a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, but eventually you'll simply drag that call to the point which just drops because it has no place to put you.
YDY. YDY recognized. Back to you in a minute. Is there enough experience, Joe, that we can say that if you're in a very rural area, if my airplane is flying over Montana and there's one or two cell sites within range of that airplane, that life is a lot simpler, that the way the handoff occurs, the way it's programmed right now, it's trying to hand you off to an adjacent cell site 3, 4, 5 miles away. And at the rate you're moving, it really wants to, if it had enough intelligence, wants to hand you off to a cell site that's, let me pick a number, 200 miles away. I'm not sure the programming of the system allows it to do that. So therefore, in a major metro area, I'm getting the impression I might have a hell of a lot more trouble than if I'm flying over a rural area. To B2RYY, K2RIW.
Handoff is one thing. Another thing to consider is engineering can also restrict the distance from the cell site that you can set up a call on. Usually in metropolitan areas, that can typically go anywhere from like 3-4 kilometers out to about maybe 7 or 8 kilometers. Maximum distance you'll never be able to set up a call on a cell site. Even if you had nothing else you could see, you could be out in the water like 15, 20 miles out, you could see a cell site, but you may not be able to set up on it because the engineering purpose will make that cell site reject the call if it's more than 70 kilometers away from the cell site. Back to you, Dick.
Wow. Let's have a little more on that one, Joe. Does the system do real electronic ranging, or is there some kind of a full duplex mode where the latency of the feedback can't be satisfied if you're more than that number of kilometers away? Is this programmed to intentionally reject long-distance calls by some form of very active ranging? Or is it because the hand shape has to respond fast enough, and for that number of miles away, you're getting too many nanoseconds or microseconds of delay? What's really going on there, Joe, if you happen to know? W2RYY, K2LIW.
Yes, I do know the answer to that. It's an engineering parameter. It's usually set up by network engineering that they purposely will restrict the range of the cell site. Their cell site will not set up a call past so many kilometers away from the cell site. It has to do with the timing advance. They don't want the cell site handling calls too far away from the distance of the cell site. That's basically the reason. That's how they electronically restrict the range of a lot of cell sites. Like, you use down tilting, but that's also another method they use. Many times you could be out in a boat 15, 20 miles out on the water and have a clear path back to a metropolitan area with GSM phone, and it may not set up a call on a cell site. You can see it, but you press the call button and the call won't be set up on the cell site with the system.
Joe, this range restriction that you're now describing, how recent is that? I'm getting the impression that it must not have existed in 9/11, on 2011, in order for those vital calls to be made during that event. So how recent is this innovation, this change that you're describing? Is that something that happened 6 months ago or 6 years ago? W2RYY, K2LAW.
First of all, somebody else is trying to blur it in between transmissions here. If somebody else has a comment on GSM networks, go right ahead.
Yeah, I was just having a question. How did they managed to record the conversation in 9/11. It was thought that even now that Dylan was collecting based on the Patriot Art only the wrong data, and never the single word was recorded. So they had a plenty of evidence of the conversation taking on that plane. And also, from what I see in here, it was one hole, one piece of fuselage. There was another a few miles away, about 80 miles away piece of that. So that indicates that it might possibly happen that a plane explodes in the air. And then I remember from my own experience many times I was flying and the cell phone didn't work. When you were in the altitude of say, a few thousand feet, there was no way that you could communicate from your cell phone. And to Aegean.
First of all, it's very hard to follow what you're trying to say.
Part of a question. How do they manage to record physically the conversation on the plane when... That's true. We don't know the elevation that happened and might happen for a certain period of time. At second, based on the revelation that we have, at least in the public radio, we have that it was only the raw data of the numbers called that was collected, but not the physical words or not physical conversation of the people. And, of course, they didn't have an idea, I believe, what exactly the point is, the plane is. So, answer the first part there.
Well, I don't know how many of those conversations were actually made by cell phones within the aircraft or attempts from people using cell phones in the aircraft, or how many people tried to pick up the airphone in the seat installed at them, because many of these aircraft have airphones installed on them, which allow them to make three, four, five, six conversations at once out of the aircraft. That's not a totally different type of system.
Joe, let's go back to the original question.
He didn't answer the question.
Joe, can you please answer the original question, which was, what was the original question? The original question was the range limitation equipment installed 6 months ago or 6 years ago? And as soon as he stops talking, I'll pass it back to you, and we can get an answer to that particular question. Other than that, the question is being answered. I can't understand. So back to you, Joe.
There's no equipment that was installed in the system. It's a matter of the software parameter that the engine network engineering can implement on a particular base station that's deployed out there. That's what I'm talking about. It has nothing to do with deployed equipment. It's totally operating within the equipment itself. It's a matter of one of the software parameters that the equipment can be told to do.
Okay. Was there a change in the equipment itself between 9/11 and now? I may be wrong, but I think it really was a cell phone call, not a air phone call, a cell phone call that occurred during 9/11. If there is this 5 mile or 6 mile limitation, I'm wondering why it didn't work at that time, if you happen to know. W2LYY, K2LIW.
All right, let's clarify this. All right. I have familiarity with a company that they use GSM technology, okay? That was implemented in equipment when I was working with them starting 1996, so that was well before 9/11, okay? So that parameter is already set up and usable at that time, as far as I knew from talking network engineering. What you don't know is that the people who were making these cell phone calls at these great distances, these cell sites, were they talking on a lower frequency, like either AT&T or Verizon, at 800 megs, using an analog channel or a digital channel? Nobody knows that. The analog channels are not restricted, distance restricted. Many, many years before that, when I worked for another company that used analog type of transmissions called AMPS, you could set up a call 30 or 40 miles away from the cell site.
And, of course, they had the recording devices ready for this kind of event, waiting just to happen. Right? I'm just asking.
I don't know what you're talking about, recording devices.
The real question is now,
certain brand names and certain protocols do have a range limitation. That's what I think I'm hearing, Joe. I'm getting the impression that not all protocols and not all systems have a range limitation. Could I buy a brand name of cell phone today or a service which does not have a range limitation? W2RYY, K2RIW.
Well, the only way to probably answer that question completely is to call the customer service. But whether they'll tell you that type of answer or not is probably negative. You probably won't be able to get that type of answer from them because most of the people you talk to on the other end of the phone don't know that.
Okay. You know of specific brand names that do have a range limitation. Do you know of specific brand names and or protocols where you're not sure if they have a range limitation? Is there a possibility today that I could buy a brand name that doesn't have a range limitation? And is that different than what occurred in 9/11? W2RYY, K2RIW?
First of all, it has nothing to do with the brand name of the cell phone, okay? I'm not talking about that whatsoever. I'm talking about the platform. The platform I'm talking about is GSM. That platform's been around for a long, long time. First used in Europe, now it's been used over here. That type of platform is what I'm talking about. The other type of platform that's used in this country, in North America, is CDMA. I don't know much about CDMA as far as the ins and outs of the engineering works of how that works. You'd have to get a hold of NQGIG. He works for a company. He probably would be able to tell you whether those type of phone calls are range restricted. Or Bill. He works for a company that also uses the type of technology. He could be able to fill you in a little better if that those type of calls can be range restricted or not. But I can tell you on GSM, they absolutely can be range restricted in the cell site.
Yeah, I created a problem when I said brand name. By the word brand name, I meant brand name of the cell service, not the brand name of the thing in my hand. And so I guess there is some doubt as to which services, which platform, as you call it, which platforms do or don't have a range limitation in order to simplify this process of handoff. And is it your impression, Joe, that the 9/11 call that we've often heard about was likely to be a cell phone call as opposed to an airphone call? I don't know if airphone existed at that time, and maybe we all don't know. Over to you, Joe, K2LAW.
Airphone calls absolutely existed in those times. They were in many cases, a type of analog type of transmission from the plane. They weren't digital until the very, very late 90s. Actually, maybe in 2000, they probably were digital. I think it was swinging up to about the 800 meg bands and trying to get up to also 454, something, 459 for a region of the band of what they're using. They probably could have been digital. I don't know. I don't know what type of technology they're using as far as the airphone installed equipment and how many conversations they can handle. But even in 2001, there were still some cell sites in some areas running with analog transmissions, and that's basically on the AMPS type of technology being used by AT&T and Verizon, so one of the two. I can't tell you what was being, this data is probably very hard to backtrack and find out who made the call and exactly what cell site or what part of the network handled the call and what mode is being handled, and to answer your question, I don't know that.
You're perfectly right. A smarter man knows what he doesn't know, Joe. Okay, anyone else got any further comments on any of the subjects above? We're down to our last 10 minutes.
I was interested, we could hear on the TV the copy of the conversation, people talking, and there was an indication, at least from those conversations, that or he was talking from this number, this is the number of his cell phone, or she was talking and we heard. I wonder how it was possible at this time to record those conversations. If that happened at this particular time when there was a total chaos, was the system was capable of recording anything and everything around the country? And to answer your
question. Person who said comment, who was that?
K1MJM, I just wanted to say if it was a 911 call, it would definitely be recorded.
The have a conversation between the families and the people in the plane. That's what all indication it is from the recordings that were presented to the public.
Yeah, I think the possibility exists that a reporter knows that some kind of air-to-ground communication took place. For the news report, it was called, at least the news report that I heard, it was called a cell phone call. But did the reporter really worry about a minor detail as to whether or not that was a cell phone call or whether it was air phone call? That's one of the questions. And is there a difference in the system then versus the system now? And so let me throw out this question. Has anyone within the sound of my voice that's willing to say yes to us right now, in the last, let me pick a number, 6 months, year or so, on an airliner, used a cell phone, whether it was for text messaging or audio real conversation? Has anyone used a cell phone from an airliner? Did it work? Give me a call letters if the answer was yes. K2RIW in the TechNet.
Right. Doesn't work. I've been in the plane many times, and simply by seeing the indicator of the on the phone, I could see if I have a connection or not. Not even talking from it. If you forget to switch off your phone, you could also see that. Enter GR.
And what might be my comment? Okay. N1YDY, go right ahead. Hank, K2LAW.
What I forgot to say earlier was that, you know, the same way that a lot of our antennas have gain, call it, you know, they have a lobe that's more interesting, that's closer to the ground than one that radiates up in the air. A lot of cell phone antennas, you know, are not designed to radiate into the air, so even though they do quite well in their terrestrial environment, they're literally not designed to radiate up, so, you know, you'll get some cell phones that, or some cell sites that do better than others, but it's more of an accident rather than a design feature.
Yeah, I'm going to guess, Hank, that the antenna pattern is a kind of a pancake pattern aimed at the horizon. However, I've seen those actual antennas. I can make a guess. They might have a 30-degree vertical beam width. Okay, if that's true, then within 30 degrees of the horizon, that's going to include a large number of aircraft at high altitude, at long range, as such. And air-to-ground has tremendously smaller attenuation compared to ground-to-ground. Best example, you take your 2-meter handy-talkie, and you got another 2-meter handy-talkie, and you hand it to a member of your family and tell them to go walking down your street and talk to you. By the time they get a mile or a mile and a half away, the conversation is starting to get pretty marginal. At 2 miles, you're probably not going to make it. Take that exact same handy-talkie, hand it to astronaut Owen Garriott on Space Shuttle, and he is over northern Texas, 1,500 miles away. And if you were the only two guys on the air and not jamming each other with 40,000 other guys, you would easily talk to each other. So as such, within that 30-degree angle, let me drop. Within that 30-degree elevation angle of my speculation of the antenna pattern, and when it comes to direct air-to-ground attenuation, free space attenuation, as such, I guarantee that there's a lot of high-altitude aircraft at a large number of miles that are inside of that antenna pattern, and if there wasn't a range limitation, the signal strength is going to be strong enough, you've got the capability. So except for range limitation, maybe you're not going to talk to the ones that are directly below you, but off to the horizon, there's a lot of cell sites that you're within communication range radio-wise. Protocol-wise, we don't know. That's my feeling on that one, is where I'm going, Hank. N1YDY for any other combination, K2LAW.
But Dick, you know, there's well-established guidelines for what the ranges are. The one that comes to mind is 1.229 times the square root of the height difference between the transmitting and receiving antennas. And if you do the math, you basically find that 5 watts will get you about 220 nautical miles from 35,000 feet. And I know from personal experience that 5 watts in the old airplane that didn't have heated windshield in the cockpit would give me about a 160-mile footprint from the aircraft forward when we were in cruise flight. So, you know, it's well established that if you have a little bit of power, you can do quite well. But the thing is whether or not you can form the handshake and get the type of protocol link so that you can actually make a cell conversation, a cell call. And that's really what you're interested in. I just don't think you're going to get it from altitude. But that's just my opinion. And one whitey white.
I hear you, Hank. Therefore, are you saying that the 9/11 incident over Pennsylvania, that from what you know, that would have to have been a air phone call, it could not have been a cell phone call, even though many news reporters thought it was? Over to you, Hank.
No, I'm not saying that. Airphone, you know, while airphone does exist, it still has existed. It really peaked in the late 80s, the late 90s, and after that, a lot of the airlines simply didn't want to maintain the equipment because they still had a cost for maintaining it. And if not enough people were willing to make the phone calls at the high service cost in order to make the connections, you usually had to use your credit card. Then a lot of times the airlines said, look, this isn't making money for us, and they took it out or they deactivated it or whatever. So I'm not too sure that it was an air phone call. And like another guy said earlier in the evening, that if it was a 9/11 call or to any type of emergency dispatch, and of course it was recorded, whether or not it was to personal, to somebody's life, I don't think I've actually ever heard that, but we've certainly heard the 9/11 calls that were, or I should say the emergency dispatch calls that were recorded. And, so I'm really not sure if it was a cell phone call or an air phone call, but I just, I'm not a, I don't need your in the direction of airphones because I sort of think that airphone is on its way out. I don't know what United, I think it was United Airlines flight. I don't know what United Airlines policy was towards airphone at that time.
I'm reading right now.
Let me ask you this question, Hank. From what you're telling me, airphone seems to be falling into disservice at this time. In other words, are a significant number of companies deciding they no longer want earphones, and is that just 10% of them or 90% of them that have made that a decision? I'll be passing it over to you in a minute, Hank. So, from what you know, has earphone phones, is it being essentially discontinued? N1YDY, K2RIW, go ahead, Hank.
But you've got to understand, Dick, I only work for one airline, so I can only talk about what that particular company did. And, when I talk about things, it's serially in my career when I work for one company versus another. So, I only know that the airline I work for does not use airphone at this time, and they made that decision a number of years ago, over a decade ago.
Okay, but since you're in the business, is it your guess that maybe other airlines have also decided to drop airphone, or you really have heard no hints about whether other airlines love or hate airphone? Over to you, Hank.
Airphone's on its way up. We're looking at folks providing that micro cell site in flight so that you'll be able to use your own handset through the aircraft and have the aircraft relayed either through satellite, which is what they're talking about in Aviation Week, but I haven't seen any of these things, or some other method of relaying it down to the ground for terrestrial communication. But the bottom line is, I think that you're going to find that you'll be able to use your own cell phone when you're in flight in the not-too-distant future. And one YDY.
Now, I called it a micro cell site on the aircraft. That's just a pure guess on my part. I've got no direct knowledge. You, being in the industry, maybe have direct knowledge. Has the so-called micro cell site concept caught on? Do you have reason to believe that some of the airlines are using or about to use micro cell sites? Over to you, Hank, K2LIW.
Gendic, according to Aviation Week and Space Technology, which is, as you know, a publication that's available, that the airlines are looking at it. I only know that the company I work for probably isn't. I actually don't even know that they're not. I just know that they haven't told any of the flight crew anything about it, so we don't know anything about it.
You said some magic words. If it's an Aviation Week and... Okay, stand by a minute.
Visiting the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, code number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, code number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
Thank you.
2 PPN and 2 ZEP.
Net tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL Amateur Radio Repeater System.
N2ZEP Mobile.
Number three.